Back together again, you and I chatting it up on a very busy Thursday show, April 17th, 2025 on Connecticut Today. I wondered out loud after seeing opposition at the state capitol to lower electric bills if the so-called local environmentalists actually want higher energy bills for state consumers, just to make a point. Wilton Republican Registrar of Voters Annalisa Stravato dropped by to talk about recent comments made by Secretary of the State Stephanie Thomas regarding a Trump White House voting proposal. Only Bridgeport blogger Lenny Grimaldi dropped by with all the latest Park City buzz, including news on cats, while CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum joined us again to break down two major legal battles still dogging the Trump White House. All right, so do me a favor, please, and pay attention. Make no mistake here. Make no mistake. We are going to find out, probably within the next couple of weeks, whether or not the majority Democrats in Hartford and or the environmental lobby actually care about your electric bills. Because they talk a good game, and I've always said they're full of crap. They don't care. Now, while we were doing the show yesterday, we had there was a public hearing going on in Hartford. I alluded to this a little bit with our buddy, our pal Dan Haar, in the 5 o'clock hour. Something interesting is happening there that is likely to get derailed by who else? The environmental groups. Because make no mistake, the environmental groups don't care if you pay less for electricity. In fact, they would probably care that you paid more. Ed Mahoney's story here in the Hartford Current is something that was transpiring yesterday as we did this show. Environmental groups lined up Wednesday at a public hearing to criticize the legislature's first comprehensive effort. Did you get that? They're finally getting their tails in gear on the majority Democratic side, working with some Republicans to try and lower electricity bills. But environmental groups lined up at a public hearing Wednesday to criticize the first big effort to reduce the ever-increasing energy costs in this state. What's their problem? They complain that measures to cut your bills, to cut customer bills, threaten funding for clean energy and efficiency programs. The environmental groups don't care that a lot of you can hardly pay their electric bill. They don't care. They don't care. This fund and that fund for the environment and this organization and green this and green that. Listen to me. They're all full of crap. I wish I could say something else, but substitute crap for you know what. The better understood colloquialism. They're all full of it. Now, the state's electric utilities, the major utilities, UI and Eversource says here, they generally support the legislation. Eversource and UI are responsible for less than half of the charges on a typical customer bill. You have to understand that. It's easy to lash out at Eversource and UI, and we all have fun doing it, and we're cracking jokes, and who's married to who, and who cares, and this is the other. They're not the problem. Of course they like the bill. It would substantially, says here, reduce or remove from your bills charges over which they have no control. And the so-called environmental groups, they don't want that. They still, with these environmental groups, many of them would still have you go through a monthly rectal exam every time you open up your electric bill or log on to see it from UI or Eversource. Analysts have said the bill could cut hundreds of millions of dollars from customer rates by restructuring how the state buys energy and how consumers pay for it. Interesting, huh? Notably, now get this, it would immediately lower, says the current here, the typical bill by as much as 25%. And it would strip away what's become a much criticized public benefits section from the bills and shift it toward in-state bonding. Hell, we bond for everything else. Why do we do this? But oh no, those who say they love the environment, no, they're telling you as a consumer to go screw. Oh, I'll have the comments for you straight ahead. But we start here at 203-333-9422. Wait till you hear some of these. 203-333-9422. Here's the question. Do you really think state lawmakers in Hartford and the environmental groups are serious about lowering energy costs for consumers? Or do the environmental folks, I'll be nice here, do they actually want you to pay more? So it looks like the clown show is ready for a new act in Hartford. And I hate to have to say that, and I hope I'm proven wrong, but all the indicators are there. All the indicators are there. There was a public hearing yesterday on a bill that you know, has been introduced that if it's implemented, it could significantly lower your electric bill, and part of it would be getting rid of that public benefits charge that, whether you want to argue the efficacy of it all day, a lot of people don't like. And you have majority Democrats arguing with each other, and the Republicans are there going, okay, anytime you kids want to kiss and make up here. But all the environmental groups, they're all mad about this. Imagine that. The environmental groups. Folks, I'm telling you, they don't give a crap about how high your electric bill is. They don't. They haven't cared. None of those people in Hartford have cared for 20 or 30 years since this has become a problem. They don't care. The first allegiance that majority Democrats have in Hartford on this is the environmental groups. They don't want to lose their elections. So when the environmental groups tell the majority Democrats, jump, the Democrats there say, how high? How high would you like me? Hind legs or just my front two legs? There's a bill being considered up in Hartford that would do a bunch of things, set up a different way the state utilities purchase power, and it would also get rid of something that nobody seems to like, except if you're in the General Assembly or except if you're in an environmental group. This asinine public benefits charge. Okay, we have to pay it. Put it as a line on the regular budget. Again, take a little less money away. Again, how much money are we spending on illegals? Rhetorical question, because the Lamont office won't answer that. I know I'm being a tad rhetorical here. Environmental groups lined up at a public hearing Wednesday to criticize a push to lower energy costs in this state. Do I need to say more? All these green groups, they only care about their own. They want to screw you. Do you understand what I'm saying? The VP of Eversource, Doug Horton, telling lawmakers that removing the public benefits from consumer bills about $1 billion a year would immediately save the typical customer of his company $45 to $50 a month. Opposition to the bill came from the solar industry, other clean energy advocates, and environmental groups who expressed concern that the proposal by Democrat John Fonfara, Hartford State Senator, could jeopardize state subsidies to decarbonization and energy efficiency programs. So again, folks, please, I'm begging you. We have example one here of the biggest impediment to you and your friends and your neighbors paying less on your electric bills are the environmental groups. Tom Swan runs the Connecticut Citizens Action Group. He called the bill destabilizing, foolhardy, and a direct assault on our clean energy programs and goals. Ah, screw what the bill costs you. Another point said, and here now again, here's a let 'em eat cake moment. And I'm not necessarily criticizing Mr. Swan as an individual. I haven't spoken to Tom in years. But this, do you understand this is the prevailing attitude in Hartford? And it prevails because you elect many of the same people over and over and over and over and over and over again without thinking. Swan said he has not seen energy costs, quote, fall anywhere in the world over 32 years as a consumer advocate without government intervention. Well, yeah, Tom, you need government intervention. Samantha Donowski of the Sierra Club's Connecticut chapter said, quote, we don't want to see renewables hobbled at a time when we really need to be bringing them online to meet our state goals, unquote. So again, go screw, pay your bills, we don't care. Lori Brown of the League of Conservation Voters said that if energy efficiency programs were removed from customer bills, they would have to compete for funding at the legislature against an array of any state programs. Well, yeah, Lori, yeah. That's the way it should be. Now, our buddy, our pal, Ryan Fazio, Republican Greenwich, heard that comment and said, geez, I guess I look at it a little differently. That's because things that cost hundreds of millions of dollars being at the whim of elected officials is how a democratic system is supposed to work. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Do you see what I'm talking about here? You can, in this state, good ideas wither and die in Hartford. Now, again, is Fon Farrar's bill the be-all and end-all? I doubt it. Sometimes this stuff has to be worked on. But do you really think state lawmakers in Hartford and the environmental groups are serious about lowering energy costs for consumers? Some lawmakers maybe. The environmental groups, folks, they're just not. They're just not. You heard what one of the big energy CEOs said yesterday, as I told it to you here. If they get rid of this public benefits charge, that's $45 to $50 a month. $40 to $50 a month, figure $480 to about $600 a month back in your pockets and wallets and billfolds and everything in a year. But the so-called environmental groups say, no, you must pay that. You see why people leave the state, you see? You see why people leave? Well, it's just shifting around money, Paul. Yeah, it is. And maybe it should be shifted to the general fund. And, geez, I don't know. Maybe we let the people we vote for make the tough decisions. Because you know what? It is the laziness. And I know this had Republican support 2 years ago as well in the buying of power from Millstone. All this stuff. You know what? I'm talking figuratively now, not literally. But this the energy policies of this state need to be blown up. I don't care how big or small the pieces are, but the energy policies of this state, as witness what we saw yesterday, need to be blown up. The push brooms have to come out, clean the floor, and start over and figure it out. And as far as the environmental groups are concerned, stop it. Stop it. Because, frankly, I don't care about you. I couldn't give less of a crap if I tried about your green initiatives when you have some people here in this state, when you have some people here in this state calling this program and whatever, and then saying that they can't they can't pay their bills. So Stephanie Thomas, one of the constitutionally elected officers of the state, she's the Secretary of the State of Connecticut. She's been on this radio station several times. She finds herself in a little bit of a controversy, doesn't seem to be going away. Now, the Madam Secretary was addressing what was supposed to be, or I guess was billed at, or is, a nonpartisan event a few days ago. We'll get to that momentarily. And she was talking about a controversial proposal from the White House, from the Trump White House. You probably heard about this, how to prove your citizen or citizenship when you vote or when you register. And she made a reference to Nazi Germany. And it has been denounced to the credit of both parties on both sides. But a lot of people are saying, you know, you don't do that accidentally. Oops, made a Nazi reference. As Kevin Reddy points out in his Daily Ructions column, about the only guy that has license to do that and get away with it is Mel Brooks, if you remember the movie and the play. So this audio was sent to Kevin Reddy of this gathering. And I'm going to play just a few seconds of it. The quality is not great. It's not outstanding here. But there is a reference here to the Nazi SS, or in a sense, Hitler's police force. It's a few second reference. Again, the quality is not really good, but she admits what she says.
I'm probably going too far. It sounds a little bit like the SS to me. But
I'm probably going a little too far. It sounds like the SS to me. Yeah, that was probably a little too far, Madam Secretary. And she issued a mea culpa. She said, quote, I understand if my comments made you feel something that was not my intent. Because it wasn't my intent, you have my apologies if you felt personally attacked. That could not be further from my goal. I do not look at this group as a Republican or Democratic. I look at this group as election administrators. I can see how some Republicans thought my comments were aimed at them, but they were not. They were aimed at policies. Little verbal twister there. Joining us right now to comment on that, Wilton resident, Annalisa Stravato. You know the name. She's been around for years. She's on the Wilton Republican Town Committee, one of the two registrars of voters in the town of Wilton. Former vice chair of the Connecticut Republican Party, delegate to the RNC. First time we've had her on. And Elisa, hi, it's Paul. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hello, Paul. Very good. Thank you for having me on.
Well, first of all, Annalisa, let me ask, were you at that meeting or not?
I was at the conference, yes.
And you heard that, Annalisa, and you went, because the room kind of went silent after that for a few seconds. What was your initial thought when you heard that?
So I was actually not in the room when she made the statement. Yeah. I was outside in the lobby, but I received a text message. And also, as I was making my way back into the hall, ran into several Republican registrars who were just appalled. But I have since, like you played, listened to the actual audio. And suffice it to say, you know, Secretary Thomas has an opinion about our president and those who support him. But that was not the room for that to be shared. ROVAC is a committee that is made up of bipartisan professionals. And I feel very confident that they will do their job and uphold their oath.
Mm-hmm.
However, she did pierce a very delicate veil of trust. And for that, I think she needs to be held accountable for.
You know, there are things, and you know, I do this for a living, right, Annalisa? And once or twice a show, I sit back there and I say, well, gee, should I have said that? I'm sure there are times in your career in public service with the RNC or locally where you say stuff and you're like, nah, you know. But
no doubt.
Yeah, but there's some things that, like, you just don't go to accidentally. Or flippantly. And I think especially in this case, I ain't buying that, well, whatever her, with all due respect to her, whatever her apology said, I mean, she talked about the Nazi SS. I mean, come on.
Well, I can appreciate that she sent a apology. However, it was more of a word salad apology. And to me, to make an off-the-cuff remark in quotes, I feel that those off-the-cuff remarks are really an indication of how someone really feels.
Yeah.
Because that's you're absolutely right. We usually make those mistakes when we are voicing something that we truly believe in. And that gives me a lot of pause. Because she is, you know, an elected official who represents all voters.
And you're right. And look, does she have opinions on policies from the White House? I'm sure she does. I'm sure she's not in favor of those, as many of my own Democratic friends are not in favor of those. But again, you know, Annalisa, when you do the Hitler thing, it's kind of, eh? So do you think personally that her apology may have fallen a little short? Or are you satisfied with it, or too much of a word salad, as you said?
I feel that it fell a little bit short. I would hope that Secretary Thomas will do better. I think that our registrars deserve better. I think our election process does better with it. And I think the people of Connecticut deserve better than what has taken place.
Let me ask you here before we wrap up. There's so much talk, Annalisa, on the federal level, and even now in the state level with Bridgeport. Hello, you know, with everything going on in the Bridgeport area, other allegations. Are we doing enough here? Are both sides, Republican and Democrats, are we doing enough here to, even though things rarely supposedly happen, to just make sure the process from voter rolls to voter registration to more and more use of absentee ballots, are we really running a tight ship here, or are there things we could be doing better?
I think there are things that we could be doing better. But at the end of the day, you know, this falls on the registrar voters. And I feel confident that they will be able to deliver, you know, safe elections. We can always add more protection. Uh-huh. We can always add different layers. In my opinion, even one inaccurate vote or, vote that shouldn't be taking place is one too many. I think it is a sacred privilege mm-hmm. to be able to cast that vote. And I think it should be treated as such.
You know, finally, one thing that Secretary Thomas was very vocal about, and I supported her wholeheartedly on the show here, she's really banging the gong here, Annalisa, that the cities and towns need more money if we're going to be doing this expanded voting, this early voting. She got up there chastising members of her own party for that. Are you in agreement with that? Is Hartford falling short a little bit in giving you guys and gals the money you need to do this correctly on a municipal level?
Well, Hartford gave us a unfunded mandate that I think was not totally thought out. I also feel that the way the question was put on the ballot was a bit ambiguous. Mm-hmm. I think they were expecting a completely different process. And I do believe that Hartford needs to provide the monies to the towns to be able to, you know, administer accurate and safe elections. It is the fundamental starting point of our democracy, and it should be protected.
Annalisa Stravato, one of the two registrars of voters in the beautiful town of Wilton. Annalisa, thanks. You've got the number. Don't be a stranger, and I'm sure we'll talk down the road. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Paul. Pleasure. Take care.
Appreciate it. Annalisa Stravato, one of the two Wilton registrars of voters. She's on the Wilton Republican Town Committee, former vice chair of the Connecticut Republican Party. And she was selected to represent Connecticut as a committee woman to the Republican
National Committee.
Hey, the heck with me. I have people in the offices here, the beautiful palatial offices of Connoisseur Media coming up to me. Hey, is Lenny on with you this week? I said, of course he is. Website only in Bridgeport.com. No tariffs yet on Lenny Grimaldi. Lenny, how are you, sir?
Uncle Paul, you're a little ornery today.
Lenny, I'm sorry. This is why I could never be in the General Assembly. They'd be wheeling me out the day I got there.
Are you kidding? That's all right. Give him hell.
Will the gentleman from Wallingford please control himself? No, I won't, Mr. President. I won't. Oh, my God. Jeez. Did you ever think about that, Lenny? Did you ever think of a legislative run, honestly?
God, no.
So you're like me, right?
No. I would never get elected to anything. I weigh too much baggage. But I'm the guy behind the curtain. I like being the guy behind the curtain.
Yeah, but I mean, at one time, did you, because I know you back in your newspaper days, did it ever occur to you, hey, I'm smarter than these Cavones or not? You didn't want this.
Oh, I am smarter, but I just don't want to get elected. I just want here's what I want to do. I want to run a race for you, right?
Yeah.
And we'll get you elected because what you say on the campaign trail is different than being in the General Assembly. I want to get you elected. Yeah. You get sworn in, and then you resign.
Yeah.
That's all. We won.
Imagine that.
It,
and it ain't bad now because, you know, everybody makes 40, 45 grand a year. I was supporting that pay increase they got a few years ago. But having said that, it is good to see, Lenny, and I've gone crazy on the show about this, the whole deal with school bus and school safety and these stunads that pass school buses. Good to see that one member of the Bridgeport delegation, as you wrote, is finally out in front on this and trying to get all this stuff instituted, right, to make our kids safer.
Oh, yeah. It's Heron Gaston, and he's a state senator. He represents like two-thirds of Bridgeport and the western portion of Stratford. And, you know, he's been on top of this, you know, for the last couple of years. And, you know, there was like more than 10,000 violations reported in Bridgeport alone. Yeah. of just people just regarding school buses, you know, in front of schools where kids are getting out of school or going into school. And he's got pretty much everybody on board on this, because it affects everybody. This is not just an urban suburban kind of thing. Obviously, there's more. You got more traffic in the urban areas, but I mean, this affects, you know, people, you know, in the suburbs and rural areas, you know, just as much as people just don't care about it. And so they're trying to put some teeth into the law, so you know people don't do this anymore. And then they've got, you know, they've got better, you know, school security cameras on these buses now, which in the old days didn't have anything. I mean, you know, when we were kids, they could have run us over. Who cares? Check out underneath the tire. Where's Paul and Ray? Oh, we forgot. Check out. Remember that they had the chains on the tires and all that?
Yeah. Budget hearing, public hearing on the city budget tonight. I know that. Lenny, in the past, and I've seen and you've told me, these things aren't generally well attended. Yes or no on this? Any changes coming up this year? What do you think the public input will be here?
You know, I get offline. I get my readers who give me the needle because I play up these public hearings on the fiscal proposal, the budget proposal, because I love to see who shows up.
Yeah.
Right. And to answer your question, in the short term, it depends who's cranked up.
Okay.
You know, some years the school system, they rally the troops, they get them in, we need more money. But I have gone to these things. I remember one year, it was like 4 years ago, I showed up and there was one person.
You told me this. Wait a minute. It was a mailman, I think?
Yeah,
yes, I remember. Right. You said there was one guy there.
It was a mailman. You know, and I said, dude, I said, you're a mailman. And he goes, well, someone has to deliver on behalf of the public.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah, that was it. So sometimes there'd be half a dozen.
Yeah.
Other times there'll be a lot more. It's just really a question of, you know, who's like cranked up and let's rally people. Let's get them in there. So in 40 minutes from now in the city council chambers, will be the first public hearing where, you know, citizens can go in and just say, hey, here's my input on the budget, right? So Mayor Joe Ganim submitted his fiscal plan for the fiscal year that begins July 1. And then it goes to the City Council's Budget and Appropriations Committee, the 7-member panel, and they go through this stuff. They bring in department heads, interview them, say, what are your needs? What's going on? And they grill them a little bit. But along the way, there's usually a couple of public hearings. And so Mayor Joe Ganim's proposal, no tax increase, but there's a lot of, like, what ifs, right?
Yeah.
It relies on the state legislative process. So the state, the city budget process ends before the state budget is complete. So I always call it a leap of faith kind of budget preparation. But, you know, I think it's good people have an opportunity to weigh in. Say, this is what you should be cutting. This is what should be added. These are the people who are hurting in the community, you know, and all that comes together. You know, the school system is in a financial crisis. You know, people can show up for that. There is usually every year one public hearing dedicated just to schools. But, you know, my history of going to these things, it doesn't matter. People show up and, you know, they weigh in on anything they want. And the budget committee allows the commentary. So, yeah, you know, 40 minutes, that's what they'll be talking about. And maybe, who knows? You know, a lot of this stuff's under the radar of who's going to show up to these things. Hopefully some people do. I mean, tonight, technically, most of the thunder is going to be in the city's capital plan. What the heck is that?
Okay.
That's about addressing building, vehicle, infrastructure improvements. But, you know, some people, they can come in and talk about pretty much anything, you know, budget related, and the budget committee will hear it out. So we've got, you know, over the next 4 weeks ago or so, the budget committee will go through this process, 3 weeks or so. And then, you know, they'll pass the budget. There's like a 2-week veto, a window for the mayor, and he really has ever exercised it. And then the mill rate would be set early June. But right now, based on the proposal, the mill rate was made flat, and it's been that way for 10 years under Joe Ganim.
Lenny Grimaldi, the guest, the website only in Bridgeport.com. Cats, Lenny, cats, a lot of cats in Bridgeport, you write here. Thousands, is that what the number is?
Yeah, so this is one of those kind of OIB moments, right, where there's a demolition going on the east side of Bridgeport of a building, and the construction crew, the Capozzellos, who've been demolishing buildings in this area for decades, you know, they see in this pile of rubble, they see a litter of kittens, right?
Yeah,
and
I saw.
So they call in some people they know and animal control and so on. And, you know, and then this is really bringing attention to the feral cat issue in the city. And I've written about this a little bit, but it's really kind of brought it back up. And the animal control people in Bridgeport say there's more than 60,000 feral cats in Bridgeport. Now, you know, my headline is rats, feral cats are everywhere in Bridgeport.
I saw. Yeah, that was creative. 60,000?
Yeah, 60,000. So to my warped way of thinking, I do that every now and then, I'm thinking, well, you know, they keep the rat population down.
Well, yeah.
But it doesn't.
Oh, it doesn't?
No,
okay.
Because I started looking into this, and there have been studies where, you know, cats would really rather go after Speedy Gonzales than the rat, because rats are more formidable to go after.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. All right.
Oh, yeah. There have been studies in Manhattan, all over the place. But, I mean, I had to throw that in there for a little levity. But, the overriding story is that, you know, people are not, you know, they're not neutering, the cats.
Mm.
You know, and then they go out there, and then they mess around with the feral cats, and then there's
we know.
Population growth and so on. So, I mean, I don't know. Pussycat. Where's Tom Jones when you need him?
Little Tom Jones reference there. Nothing better. All right, folks, check all those stories and more. The city budget, cats, Avello Airlines, Tony Wong says stop eating when you're driving. A lot of stuff there. The website only in Bridgeport.com. Lenny Grimaldi. Lenny, have a good weekend. We'll check in later. Thanks, man.
Okay, thanks.
All right, there you go. Joining us right now, CBS News legal analyst, does an excellent job, Thane Rosenbaum, because there's nothing ever lacking, Thane, is there, on a day with the Trump White House, is there?
Paul, everything's unprecedented. It's an adventure for people like me. People always say, what do you think is going to happen? And I go, I have no idea. This has never happened before. How am I? You know, the legal system works on precedent.
Yeah.
But when things are unprecedented, you can't ask a legal analyst what he thinks or she thinks.
Yeah.
This never happened.
Yeah, because I know a lot of you folks, and believe me, I have lawyers and relatives in the business, Thane, and in real estate and litigation and criminal law, and they all tell me the only questions we feel good with are the ones we know the answers to, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, you know, we live on they call that stare decisis, the whatever happened before.
Yeah.
Gives you a guidance on what to do now. But everything with Donald Trump for the last 8 years or so, it's all new territory.
Couple things today, Thane. Quickly, again, this story of this guy who was, quote unquote, mistakenly deported. And now I don't know whether you saw this. There's a trickle of stuff coming out from the DOJ late yesterday as well. There's evidence the guy is part of MS-13. No, that's not evidence. That's hearsay. Is any of this going to change, you think? Or what's your gut feeling on this?
You know, I mean, the people that have been critical of all of Donald Trump's executive orders keep pointing out, especially in the areas of deportation,
yeah.
You know, they take particular positions. They say, well, there's no evidence with students. There's no evidence of a crime, right? Everyone's, you know, throwing out the one thing that they think they can get. So in this case, it was, well, there's no evidence that he's a member of a gang. He's a father in Maryland who may not have been a legal resident,
yeah.
But he was subject to withholding of deportation, but he was supposed to be removed. But he's not a criminal. So Donald Trump said, well, you know, we're going to go with the criminals first. So I think the people that are critical of Donald Trump said, aha, look what you did here. You sent a father away from Maryland. So clearly the Trump White House went to the Justice Department and said, can we find out what kind of court filings have been issued in earlier cases? Because he had a number of immigration matters.
Yeah.
This would be now the second time of his removal. And so apparently, I guess, they located some documents that show that he was, in fact, a gang member at some point or had some kind of affiliations. And he also had spousal abuse in his past. And the reason to do that, I guess, is to embarrass the Maryland senator who flew all the way to El Salvador pleading on behalf of a person who's a spousal abuser. And I think this was too good an opportunity for the Republicans that he went all the way to El Salvador to make a point that, you know, and what is the point? Well, here's the point. If he could somehow be returned to the United States through some miracle, it would require a miracle, the Trump administration would seek his removal again, and he would then be deported. So the only thing he's being brought back to do is to stand before a judge and claim that he's not a gang member. It wouldn't make a difference. Most people don't realize if you're before an immigration judge, which is not an Article III court, it's under the executive branch.
Yeah.
So when you hear the words immigration judge, you should think of, well, they're different. They're judges that work for the executive branch. That means they work for the president. So immigration judges historically kick you out. You do not get – when if you go before immigration judge, this is so crazy about what people are talking about here. No one seems to be worried about the tens of thousands of people, maybe not hundreds of thousands, who come before immigration judges, speak no English, there's no translator, and they don't have a lawyer. So for all this talk about due process, really, none of those people have anything near due process. They don't have a lawyer. They don't speak English, and someone gives them a 15-minute hearing that no one knows what he said, and then he's gone. So that's what's really, you know, to show you how political this is. Now we're fighting over people who in the ordinary sense wouldn't even have a lawyer. But now because the country is so polarized, immigration and how people are being deported becomes the big ticket item when in fact no one's asking how is it usually done. and it's not like this.
Yeah, and finally, Thane, what did I see here? Gavin Newsom, the governor of California, he's now suing the Trump White House and I guess the president himself on some of these tariffs. Did I read that right?
Yeah, so he's taken his cue from a number of small businesses that brought an action against the Trump administration in the International Court of Claims, Trade Court. So that deals with legal matters dealing with trade and commerce. Gavin Newsom is saying, California is the fourth largest economy in the world.
That's
his point. And we have an agricultural base that is totally dependent on what we do with Canada and Mexico. And you are going to you, Mr. President, under the Constitution, have nothing to do with taxes and tariffs. That's a congressional thing. That's not you. So here you are putting our state out of business. So you've clearly overreached your constitutional authority. You know what Donald Trump says? He says, well, you know, there actually is a statute that says there's during times of economic emergency, the president can step in and issue rulings, orders, in order to keep the country on track economically. And fentanyl is coming from China, and I'm trying to seal off borders and pick up, you know, make sure that the country has national security. So that's another constitutional question that's going to be raised. You know, it's true the president doesn't have authority over taxes usually, but are we in a an economic crisis? And if we are, Donald Trump is going to point to that statute and say that this gives me the latitude to impose these new tariffs.
Interesting stuff. Thane, as always, great explanations. Love the stuff. Thane Rosenbaum, CBS News.
Thank you,
Thane,
Paul.
Thanks. Have a good few days,
Thank
man.
You,
appreciate it. Yeah, bye-bye. There you go.